So, moving on to the brain. Now, having worked out all the things I've been saying so far, a couple of years ago, I was then fortunate, I think, to run into a book which I highly recommend, which is over there, which is called The Master and His Emissary, which is written by a guy called Ian McGilchrist, who is a former fellow of All Souls Oxford in English literature, who then became a psychiatrist. So he's a good example of a sort of polymath of different talents. And but anyway, his book, I think, is it gives important insights into the role of the left and right hemispheres of the brain and its effect on how we operate, really, and how we work. And he applies that not just psychologically, but in terms of the whole of culture and history. He makes a survey in his book of the impact of the left and right hemispheres of the brain on the history of ideas. Anyway, so what really struck me about his work was that it provided a further informative perspective on the ego and integration and how that works, and it seemed to provide further really confirmatory evidence of how it works. And to explain this, we'll need to talk a little bit about how the left and right hemispheres work. So, now I'm by no means a neurologist, so I can't claim to have intimate technical knowledge of the parts of the brain, but I'll explain it as I understand it. That the left and the right hemispheres of the brain do duplicate or potentially duplicate many functions, so they're almost mirror copies of each other. But over time they have specialised, so have developed distinct specialist functions, and in relation to that some parts of each side have grown more than the corresponding part on the other side. So as McGilchrist points out, the brain is slightly asymmetrical, not exactly a mirror image. So the differences between the left and the right hemisphere are not due to them, primarily to them being physically different. They're due to one side being more specialised than the other. Just like, the difference between a doctor and an architect isn't because they're physically different, it's because the doctor's specialised in medicine and the architect specialised in architecture. So the specialisation is on the lines that the left hemisphere is goal orientated, whereas the right hemisphere is open. The right hemisphere is open to experience in order to look out for threats primarily. And the left hemisphere is focused on opportunities, it's focused on things that might be useful to us. One thing in The Master and His Emissary which really struck me as a way of symbolising this really is that you can see is happening with birds, and I've watched birds, and I think I've seen it, but I can't be absolutely certain. But, the left hemisphere is connected to the right side of the body and the right eye and so on, yeah, and the right hemisphere is connected to the left. So the left hemisphere of a bird is connected to the bird's right eye. So when a bird is probing for a worm, say, it will tend more to move its head round to the right, because obviously it's on the side of its head, so that it can direct its attention at the prey. But at the same time, of course, the bird is looking out for threats, so it will do that primarily, not entirely, but primarily with its left eye. So it will be focusing on safety from time to time, and obviously you can. I mean, I think the left-right shift is a bit more subtle, but obviously you can see that over time. You can also see the bird shifting rapidly between one and the other. You know, the quick stab for the worm, and then the quick look around, and then the quick stab for the worm again, and so on. So, in a sense, we're just like this. We focus on what we want to do, and at the same time, or perhaps at slightly different times, the right hemisphere comes more into dominance in order to be open to experience. Now, but obviously what makes us rather different from birds is the evolution of representational language for humans. And McGilchrist makes a strong case for the way in which language and representation have evolved as tools, and that they've evolved in particular a part of the left hemisphere known as Broca's area. So Broca's area is known as the linguistic area, but it's also closely related to the tool-using and manipulative area of the brain. So why did we develop language, or particularly language in sentences which can describe a situation which we then believe in? Well, mainly so that we can understand how to gain our purposes in a particular situation. So that description of, for example, where the deer are in the valley, you know, can help you run towards them and shoot at them or whatever, if you think about an early human situation. So by doing that, we were able to, in evolutionary terms, we were able to be much more effective. But at the same time, of course, the right hemisphere is specialising in a different way, in obviously perception, in perception for all the senses, being open for what's going on beyond our immediate purposes. But that also means that the right hemisphere is linked to a wider sense of meaning. And he's also linked into experience of the body, experience of the whole body. Although there is a link between the left hemisphere and the right side of the body specifically, the right hemisphere is linked to the whole body, and is able to be sensitive to what's going on in the whole body. So that wider sense of meaning is also what links the right hemisphere to the metaphorical connections of language. I'll say a bit more tomorrow when we talk about meaning, about that and how metaphor is part of the mix here. Now, the way in which all this relates to the ego, it seems to me, is that the left hemisphere is really, well, it's the seat of the ego, if you like. So the left hemisphere focuses our desires, but also McGilchrist observes that the way in which the left hemisphere tends to assume the absolute and permanent nature of its representation. So the absolute, for the left hemisphere, its purposes at the moment are it. It's what's going on. It's what's true for the left hemisphere. That means the ego is at least seated in the left hemisphere. I wouldn't say the ego is the left hemisphere, but it's got this close relationship with the way the left hemisphere works. So if we're thinking in terms of the process of integration of the ego, then obviously the right hemisphere has a crucial role in the process of integration, because it's the right hemisphere which provides the larger perspective, whereby we can understand wider conditions that we weren't taking into account, that we weren't making part of our model previously. So that's not just scanning for threats, perhaps, but also becoming aware of other ways we might look at things, or other metaphors we might use to understand things from the ones that we'd been focusing on. But I wouldn't then say that the middle way and integration is just a question of integrating the two hemispheres. It's more a question of integrating the left hemisphere at different times with itself. So the right hemisphere is the tool of integration, so it's through becoming aware of the wider picture, whether through meditation, through creativity, through reflection, whatever it is. Yeah, we use the right hemisphere to connect whatever the left hemisphere happens to be into, the purposes it happens to be obsessed with at the moment, and provide a wider perspective, which I think is usually perhaps best understood as over time. So the right hemisphere can connect our different obsessions and make us aware of the fact that, well, actually, I wasn't so obsessed with that yesterday. It didn't seem so important, and maybe tomorrow it might be different as well. Maybe there's another way of looking at this. You know, so that's where the right hemisphere perspective seems to be coming in.
Does the right hemisphere also process time in a different way than the left hemisphere?
It does, yeah. So the right hemisphere can actually experience time passing in an immediate way, whereas the left hemisphere can sequence, but the way the left hemisphere relates to time is just one thing happens, then another thing, and that's after that one, and that's before that one. So, hence, our peculiar relationship to time, in the sense that what we think of as clock time or objective time or whatever you want to call it is not quite what the left hemisphere experiences. You know, we just have immersion in purposes and occasional awareness of time for those purposes, which is why time can seem to go faster or slower. From the perspective of the left hemisphere, and why the left hemisphere can't really understand time passing, or indeed left hemisphere can't really understand relationships in space either, because it doesn't experience space, it just experiences sort of sequences or relations in space. So there were various philosophical paradoxes that's created. So the Zeno's paradox is the idea that if you shoot an arrow at its target, this is an ancient philosopher's paradox, that it will never reach the target, because first of all it will get halfway, then it will get 3/4 of the way, then it will get 7/8 of the way. Now, each time it will get half the previous distance. So given that time is, in theory, according to the left hemisphere, infinitely divisible, you can just carry on dividing it, conceptually, so that the arrow will never reach its target. And you can think of both space and time in those terms. But obviously from the right hemisphere's point of view, there is continuity.
Mm.
The arrow does reach its target. We experience the arrow reaching its target. Space and time are not infinitely divisible, at least that's not a relevant way of thinking about it for the right hemisphere. So, basically, I think the right hemisphere has this crucial role, in integrating, also in balancing these obsessions the left hemisphere has and these models the left hemisphere gets fixed on, and making them provisional. So if we can hold ideas in our left hemisphere but also have some connection to the right hemisphere which gives a sense of perspective, then there's more provisionality in those ideas that we hold in the left. So it's obviously not in any sense a question of giving up the left hemisphere, which is crucial and essential to how we operate. We need purposes, we need an ego, but the more we can balance and make provisional that ego, then the better it works for us, really.
Can I just make a point about the left-right hemisphere thing? I find the analogy and the idea is really consistent and valuable. My only reservation with it is that with McGilchrist's book, the response when it came out was generally very positive, but not universally so. And 20 or 30 years ago, the sort of left brain, right, we've really moved on from lots of quite unhelpful assumptions about left brain, right brain, as you know. And McGilchrist's book is to an extent a response to that. However, there is a perception out in the wider world that left brain, right brain stuff has been debunked. Yeah. And he seems, at the moment, pretty much a lone voice out there. And I just wonder, because you have really embraced his ideas and a lot of your material, you mention him a lot, that it might put quite a lot of people off and just make that assumption.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the good I can say there is that theories of middle way and integration would stand without left wing, right?
Yeah.
It just provided, for me, it provided confirmatory alternative way into it.
Yeah.
And scientific evidence that could be related to it. But also, McGilchrist makes his case very thoroughly. There's incredible density of footnotes and references in his book. Obviously, I'm in no position to check that out scientifically or neurologically. But having gone to see him and also spoken to him personally, I've no reason not to trust his expertise. But obviously, it's then up to other people to investigate it. But I think that the crucial thing is perhaps the point I started with, that it's a question of specialisation of the left and right hemispheres. So if you misunderstand that as being a question of the left and right hemispheres being substantially different structurally, then you'll misunderstand what he's getting at.
Okay.
But there's also a lot of evidence, obviously particularly from people with lesions or with strokes or whatever, people who have become dependent only on one hemisphere and not the other, what they're able to do and not able to do, which he goes through in some detail.
I suppose you can look at these things in different lights, can't you? And if you just to look at the left brain, right brain kind of model as myth, but in a positive sense, I mean that in a derogatory sense anyway, to the extent to which it is helpful for me, I suppose, is the extent to which you avoid seeing it as a dichotomy, because that's precisely what we're kind of trying to get away from in the middle way, isn't it? Is this like you've got this hemisphere that's good and that hemisphere that's bad?
Well, that's another misunderstanding of it, I think. And I think, actually, McGilchrist does court that a little bit. And, he goes a bit overboard towards the end of his book in sort of pro-right hemisphere ways of talking, sort of rhetorically pro-right hemisphere, which gave me a strong impression of actually being motivated primarily by the left hemisphere. Left hemisphere taking the right hemisphere's part as an idea. Whatever the left hemisphere does, it turns into an idea. So he's got quite a strong conservatism and attachment to tradition, because he sees modernity is driven by the left hemisphere and by a narrow kind of conceptuality. You can link this into things like bureaucratization and managerialism and sort of turning everything into a dry set of forms to be filled in and so on.
NHS.
But I think in the process he does miss some positive things which one can say about modernity and the ways in which it's also released creative forces and allow people to use their eye hemispheres as well.
And then there's the Steven Pinker book recently.
Yeah.
There's an example of potentially negative bias that there's a lot of...
Oh, the Angels of
Our Passage. Yeah. This book argues that we're actually becoming less violent. It's a tome as well, about 1,000 pages or something, and it's all backed up, these ideas, that in every sphere, from sort of war to capital punishment to corporal punishment to misogyny to slavery, you name it, boom, 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 they're all going down. But most people say, no, they're not. It feels counterintuitive. Maybe because the news tells them that most news is bad. And maybe it's to do with this negativity bias, that we're more adaptive if we focus more on the negative. That if you hear that there's a saber-toothed tiger over the other hill, or there's some strawberries over that hill, you've got a better chance of surviving focusing on the saber-toothed tiger news.